Court of Appeals. We have only one case set for argument this afternoon. I'm going to begin by calling for announcements from the lawyers. In the first case that we have, and the only case that we have this afternoon, is cause number 03-18-817-CV. Appellants and appellees Scott Freshour, Margaret McNeese, Timothy Webb, and Sheriff Safran, MD, in their official capacities and as officers of the Texas Medical Board, versus appellee and cross-appellant Robert W. Van Boven, MD, DDS. And for the state, or for our appellants?
Charles K. Elder, the Attorney General's Office.
Thank you, sir. And for the appellees?
Your Honor, David Tuckfield, I have my co-counsel, Eric Cutsworn, here.
Thank you. As there's multiple appellants in this case, have y'all given the time to the clerk? That way we can, I don't need to know what it is. As long as they know, I'll do my best to follow along.
We did.
Okay, thank you. As each of you know, each side gets 20 minutes to argue. You've made your time reservations and you've notified the clerk, so I'm going to do my best to accommodate. The one thing I'm going to remind you of is our lighting system. The yellow light comes on. That means you have 2 minutes in whatever portion of your time allotment that we're in. When you see the red light, that means wrap up unless you look to me for more time. If you're still in your opening, you could be eating into your rebuttal time if that's where you are. For those of you that haven't been here before, today's proceedings are audio recorded now. The recordings will be available on the court's website in a matter of days. Housekeeping, cell phones, other devices, anyone that has any cell phones or other devices that might make some noise, please either turn them off or put them in silent mode so that we're not distracting from the lawyers up here. And for the those of you in the back, if you can't hear, these microphones are for purposes of the audio recording only. They don't amplify, so if you can't hear, you're just going to have to move up a little bit closer. And thank you for your patience. When I was sitting in one of the other two seats, when the senior judge was making their announcements, I was able to always get my stuff out and about, and I'm still maneuvering the center chair and how to get everything laid out to my satisfaction. Sometimes it's tough being a little OCD. So with that, let's go ahead and get started, and we'll hear from the lawyers. Mr. Eldred.
May it please the court. This court should reverse the lower court and render judgment that there is no jurisdiction over Dr. Van Boven's ultra-virus claim because the board did not commit an ultra-virus act. To the contrary, the board reported its temporary restriction of Dr. Van Boven's license correctly to the National Practitioner Data Bank. And under federal law, it properly reported the revision or the removal of the restriction of Dr. Van Boven's license as a revision to action report. The National Practitioner Data Bank says so itself. That's Joint Exhibit 16 and 18. Explains in great detail that the board reported both of these actions properly to the National Practitioner Data Bank. Whether the board properly temporarily restricted Dr. Van Boven's license in the first place, based on the information it had at the time, has never been litigated. And Dr. Van Boven needs that temporary restriction to be vacated or overturned before he can get the relief he seeks, which is the voiding of that order. Under federal law, just because he wanted SOA does not mean that the temporary restriction is automatically overturned. Whether the board should have temporarily restricted his license based on the allegations from patient A and patient B is a different question than whether there was ultimately sufficient evidence to support those allegations later at the SOA hearing. It's very much like the difference between a not guilty and an expunction in criminal law. A not guilty does not expunge the charge. You have to go through a separate procedure, a separate expunction procedure, and in many cases, the charges just simply are not expungible. So the fact that he wanted SOA does not mean he gets a void report. The general rule, of course, is that we do not destroy government records unless there's a statutory authority to do so. In this case, there is no statutory authority. To the contrary, the board reported this correctly, and Dr. Van Boven cannot point to any law saying otherwise.
Mr. Elder, before we get to whether or not this should have been a void action report, shouldn't we start with the scope of TMB's duties and authority under their legislation? Like, under the TMB's grant of authority, does it have the authority or discretion to determine the type of report that it submits to NBDB?
No, that's decided by federal law. In fact, I would point you to 45 CFR 60.6B, which specifically says that if a license is suspended and then reinstated, that is reported as two reports. First, a report saying that it's been rescinded, and a second, a report saying it's been reinstated.
Well, let me rephrase this another way. Doesn't TMB have the ability to interpret federal law in making that decision? Or are you saying, no, it's clear and they don't have authority to interpret that?
Well, yes, they have authority to interpret that, but there is only one interpretation. It's in the regulations. It's in the guidebook. They can point to nothing that says we did anything wrong. Again, this case is about reporting to the board, Justice Kelly. It's not really about whether the temporary restriction back in February 2016 was correct based on the information they had at the time. Based on the information they had at the time, they restricted his license, and they reported that to the board. And that is absolutely correct. That's what they should have done. And I don't know of anyone who says that that's incorrect.
Well, what I'm saying primarily is under Hall versus McRaven, doesn't the board have the authority to interpret a collateral law? You know, has that authority been given them to the state, whether it's right or whether it's wrong, whether the void is correct or the void order is incorrect?
Well, Occupation Code 164060B4 requires TMB to report disciplinary actions to the NBDB. And the regulation, the Texas Administrative Code interpreting that, says you have to do it according to federal law. And of course, you have to do it according to federal law anyway because of the Supremacy Clause. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
Can I ask a different question? On the relief that you were asking, and I'm going to get hung up, and I'm going to ask you about the relief that you're seeking as well. But that's usually, this court should be focusing on, is the relief that you're seeking. And you said that you think that this is a reversal and that we should render, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
On the ultra-virus claim.
Yes.
There were other claims made.
Well,
as y'all phrase it in your brief, the non-statutory mandamus claim, the UDJA, and a claim for damages. Are they all part of the same thing, and are you asking for, what are you asking for?
Sure. I would point you to the clerk's record, page 634. That's the only part where on the live pleadings where Dr. Ben Boven says what his waiver of sovereign immunity is. And he says there is no waiver of sovereign immunity because this is an ultra-virus case. And that's
okay.
Correct, which means he's not claimed any waiver of ultra-virus for a UDJA claim or for a mandamus claim or for damages. Furthermore, there are no waivers for any waiver, even if they had tried. The UDJA does not waive sovereign immunity for a declaration of rights.
Okay.
That's undisputed. Mandamus, common law mandamus or non-statutory mandamus, we have sovereign immunity to that under the Nazari case from last year. And it's well established in an ultra-virus case you cannot get damages.
Mm-hmm.
So
this would be a dispositive order that this court would be rendering to all claims.
Yes, and because it's an ultra-virus case, it's another reason why he can't go back to challenge the temporary restriction in February 2016. All you can do in an ultra-virus case is have the court order the board to comply with the law going forward. You can't correct things in the past. That's not an ultra-virus case. And I think he's trying to skip that part. He's trying to use this case, which is really about what kind of reports are involved with what happened in the past, to overturn the past. He can't do that because he needs to, under this court's Wiseman opinion, the only way to get that temporary order overturned.
Exhaustion.
Yes, ma'am.
But he didn't exhaust remedies, right?
That's right, and he didn't do that. Although it's in the record, he was well aware of the problem that the final order did not give him what he wanted. That's it. It's Exhibit 6, I think. Joint Exhibit 6. He wrote the board himself, and his lawyer also wrote the board on December, that's Joint Exhibit 7, on December 27th, within the period to move for rehearing. The temporary restriction, which temporarily restricted him from seeing female patients, was not at issue in front of SOA. What was it? What issue was whether the allegations were proven, and they SOA found there was insufficient evidence. So the restrictions were removed in December 2017. But again, that doesn't mean that the charges, the allegations back in February 2016 were thereby wiped off the map. He didn't have that. He could have got that perhaps by suing after exhausting his remedies. Perhaps not. That would have depended on whether a court believed that the board had no reason to restrict his license back when they received these allegations. But that's never been litigated. And you can't just erase the temporary suspension based on the allegations in this case. This case is only about the reporting of these two events. It's not about whether the events were properly decided in the first place. As the NPDP itself says, we don't second guess the temporary restriction. And they make a big deal out of that. But I think it actually helps our case. They're not second guessing the temporary restriction. But the NPDP does judge whether the temporary restriction was reported correctly and whether the removal of the temporary restriction was reported correctly. And the NPDP says we did report it correctly. If we had tried to, I think if the board had tried to submit a void report, the NPD would have rejected it. It would have said, no, this is supposed to be a revision to action report. And I go into great detail in the brief about why that is. It's in the guidebook all over the place. There's two reports in this situation.
Now, while a SOA hearing isn't formally called an appeal, isn't that in effect what it is in this case? I mean, an appeal by a trial de novo, the board's decision?
No, Justice Kelly, because one way you can get a void report is if your temporary restriction was overturned on appeal, according to the NPDB guidebook. It was not overturned, first of all. What happened was, according to the NPDB itself, according to their own regulations, you can read it yourself in Joint Exhibit 16 and 18, the restrictions were removed, but the temporary restriction was not vacated, was not overturned. So they say no, and we say no as well. Furthermore, the SOA is a part of the executive branch. It's not, we call it a court sometimes. We informally talk about that all the time. I talk about that in my brief too. It's only exercising executive power. And maybe even more fundamentally than that, SOA did not do anything other than submit a proposal for decision. At that point, the board has to decide whether to accept it, which they did, or not accept it and appeal it. It's actually the board that did it, not SOA. I see my time's up.
May it please the court. My name is David Tuckfield, and I appreciate the opportunity to make this argument. And let me tell you how this all got started for me. I met Dr. Van Boven, and I asked him, he was telling me the story. And I said, what you are telling me is not right. You're either lying to me or you don't understand what happened. And he said, no, it's true. This is what happened. And so I went and I looked at the record, and sure enough, I found out that his case was dismissed. And yet this dismissal still resulted in a punishment. He had a penalty without a violation. There was an adverse report, even though the TMB, SOA and the TMB determined there was no violation, that there was no evidence of violation, so they couldn't sanction him. And to me, it just turned the entire legal system on its head, because we had this entire process, a huge process, and at the end, he was told the case is dismissed, and yet we're still going to report to you to the National Practitioner Data Bank. Now, it's important to understand what the National Practitioner Data Bank is. Congress created it because of a national need to restrict the ability of incompetent physicians to move from state to state without disclosure or discovery of a physician's previous damaging or incompetence performance. It's a bad doctor list. And so what you have going on here is they issued an order of temporary restriction with limited due process, and that temporary restriction is followed by an informal settlement conference, opportunity for agreed orders, all kinds of processes ultimately that arrives at SOA. And if they can do that, and then SOA said, there's no findings, or there's no evidence, so it gets dismissed. So what is there left to appeal? It was dismissed. And yet they're saying that we need to appeal the order of temporary restriction. How could we have done that? We got what we needed out of SOA, and the TMB dismissed it.
So you're, and that's kind of where I was about to kind of try and jump in. So you're saying that you're not aggrieved by the final action of TMB.
So there's two things.
Right.
We are not aggrieved by the final action in the sense that after the final action, they then submitted a report. And you heard the state just tell you that there's no discretion as to whether to submit or not. We got to follow the law.
Well, and that's, I was looking, I can't find, you know, the portion of the occupation code that says that TMB has to conclude whatever it is with a final order.
Right. That's right.
So they do have to do that. The statute requires them to say something that says final order and then put a bunch of stuff behind it, signed by...
So no, I said right. I didn't mean that. That's not right.
It's
so
not right. Occupation code.
What the occupation code says is that you come up, or the regulations under the occupation code says you come up with either a decision or an order. Okay, and if it's an order, it's additional sanctions. It's sanctions.
Okay.
And interestingly, in the transcript for the our preliminary injunction, Dr. Van Boven is on record saying I received a notice of order.
Mm-hmm.
I called them and said, wait a minute, SOA said there was no findings, and they said, oh, you're right. We're going to revise the notice. We're going to send you a notice of decision. Now, the board can appeal a notice of decision or a decision, but there's really no opportunity for Dr. Van Boven to appeal a decision because that means there's no sanctions. Okay, so the decision was rendered at TMB, and then after the meeting, suddenly this order language appears at the bottom. Okay, and so in a sense. In a sense, we were aggrieved by that. They changed the order. We believe that was an ultra vires act. But even if that isn't, we're also aggrieved by outside of that final order. We're aggrieved by the fact that they then took made a report to keep him on the National Practitioner Database.
Well, do you concede that they had a ministerial duty to create that report? To create that report.
That is a ministerial duty. I think everyone concedes that.
Okay. And then they have a ministerial duty to do the report, but then it says you can do the four options, and I can't remember what they are.
So let me back up again.
Yeah.
I think I misunderstood your question. They have a ministerial duty to report accurately to the Texas Medical Board. And let me tell you why.
I'm still with you.
Let me tell you why the first report should go away. Okay, there's two very important provisions in the regulations. First is 22 Texas Administrative Code 187.5. It says the board will report a public disciplinary board action to the NPDB according to federal rules and statutes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what do you report? You report a disciplinary board action. It's got to be something that was a discipline.
Which was the temporary thing early on.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
Okay.
But then we have to look at 22 Texas Administrative Code 187.61A. And this really is a linchpin. And Professor Beal has submitted some amicus briefs about this. But this regulation says a temporary suspension or restriction proceeding is ancillary to a disciplinary proceeding concerning the licensee's alleged violation of the act. What does that mean that it's ancillary? It means it's one corpus. Your temporary restriction and the final decision is one corpus. When that was dismissed, it was all dismissed. Now they'll say, oh yeah, but this was effective up until this point, and so we had to submit that, and then it got dismissed.
Well, but isn't that what the National Reporting Database, whatever the acronym is, isn't that what they said as well, that you have to do something at the end, and here's this language that we're gonna tell you that you should probably do.
So here's the deal. First of all, the National Practitioner Data Bank, they acknowledged that they rely on the state to tell them what happened. They're not experts in Texas law. What happened here in Texas doesn't happen in all 50 states, or to my knowledge, any of the 50 states. And so they're just like listening to what the state's telling them. And in fact, at page 30 to 31 of the appellate brief, the National Practitioner Data Bank says, the board did not vacate or overturn the order of temporary restriction. It was the intention of the board to modify the restriction on your license. Now, how can that be if I have an ancillary proceeding that is ultimately dismissed and the state's telling the National Practitioner Data Bank, oh, we just modified. Modified it to what? There's no sanction. And so it's just unbelievable that they take this position. Now the National Practitioner Data Bank, the guidelines do provide some guidance. And at page E67, it says if a court overturns a board's order, the board should void the initial report. What happened here? Was this overturned? Was it dismissed? It was dismissed. And I want to call your attention to, again.
And is there a method for appealing that? Isn't that what y'all did, is to appeal or to try and modify
at the federal
database
level?
Stuff too, right?
So wait, at the federal level?
The reporting issues. Was there an attempt to do something through the national reporting system to kind of get it to where y'all were more comfortable with it?
Yes, yeah. But ultimately they said we rely on the state.
Okay.
And it's up to the state. And because of 187.61 and the other provision 187.5, the state misinterpreted this. Now
Mr. Tuckfield, didn't NBDB force the state to do an additional revision after the complaint?
So that's interesting. The I don't know if that was forced or the state decided they better cover their tracks. They did submit a second revision to action report.
You dispute the factual accuracy of what's in?
Okay, what's in there? NBB? It does say that the case was dismissed. But you have to understand what this list is. If you are put on this list, it doesn't matter what it says in there. You're on the bad list. It's a blacklist. It's a scarlet letter. And it is harmful. So it's the void.
Much like being charged with any felony. But then having the case be dismissed for whatever reason.
Exactly.
Right.
And you know, there's a case, Bayoud versus North Central Investment Corp, 751 Southwest 2nd 525, where a district court appointed a receivership. The appellate court dismissed the receivership. And the receiver said, look, the receivership was in effect all during this time. I want to get paid. And the appellate court said, no, you don't get paid. I dismissed it. And the appellate court said, because the receivership was dismissed, it was vacated. The receivership was void. It never existed. So again, back to this ancillary language, this whole corpus goes away.
All of that kind of gets me to Hall versus McRaven.
Okay.
How do we, it's much like being on an appellate court. Every now and then we err. We may fall into error, we may be led into it, but occasionally we err, and we know that. But that's the discretionary part of the gig. We have a ministerial duty to rule on stuff, but occasionally we fall into error. What's the difference here in this instance, and particularly in light of the Supreme Court's declarations in Hall versus McRaven, where there's not even that secondary protection or shield of having the opportunity to have a suit for judicial review post, you know?
So, and that's all very an interesting question, and you're right. But Hall versus Raven found that there was no ministerial duty here. You've already heard, it's in the record all over the place, that there's a ministerial duty. They said in Hall versus McRaven that the chancellor there had absolute discretion. And it's that's not what this is.
It was looking at the difference between whether or not for the purposes of establishing whether or not sovereign immunity is that's another layer that we have here. For the purposes of determining whether or not an actor such as this was committing an ultra-virus act. And ultra-virus is not doing, not recognizing your ministerial duty, not recognizing your statutory duty. I think it said that that's not the same thing as error in the execution of your duty to act.
Let me point out, and I put this in the record, that after the SOA proceeding, the determination came out on September 15th of 2017. Within a month later, on October 20th, 2017, and this is in the clerk's record at 93-94, the TMB issued a press release saying, we will do what we have to do to protect the public against Dr. Van Boven. This is after SOA issued its decision. If you think this was a mistake, I'm sorry, it wasn't. And they then followed it up in April of 2018 saying, Scott Freshour, on behalf of Zaffron, sent a statement to several state senators and said, even though the TMB voted to dismiss the case, or the TMB voted to dismiss the case, even though disagreeing with the outcome. The TMB has shown what they're doing here.
But going back to Justice Goodwin's question, in McRaven, it says, when the ultimate and unrestrained objective of an official's duty is to interpret collateral law, in that case, FERPA, in this case, you know, this registry, a misinterpretation is not overstepping such authority. It is a compliant action, even if ultimately erroneous.
Okay.
So how do we reconcile that with your position?
187.5. The board. We have a state regulation here. It's not just collateral law. They're to report a public disciplinary board action. What discipline happened here? What sanctions occurred here? And if you read 187.5 together with 187.61A, the temporary thing was ancillary to the whole. It's one corpus. There was nothing to report. There's no discipline to report. And that's why it needs to be void. The guidelines, the National Practitioner Data Bank guidelines, says the action is, you do a void when the action is overturned on appeal. Was this an appeal? I can tell you, we submitted a couple exhibits. I don't know if you've got them or not. Mm-hmm. But the bottom line is there's a long internal process to get to where they were in SOA, from the temporary order of temporary restriction until where we got to SOA. And at every point, Dr. Van Boven said, no, I disagree. Do you want an agreed order? No. Are you willing to accept these sanctions? No. It appealed internally, and we have on the record an email from senior policy analyst at the NPDB that says, void is appropriate if overturned through an entity's internal review process. It doesn't have to go to a court. That's not what the guidelines say. The guidelines give examples of going to court because, again, the guidelines are a federal, are trying to interpret laws for 50 states, and
the
I'm out of time.
Just gave for your internal review, is that from the NPDB guidebook that you just quoted?
So that's an email from a senior policy advisor from the NPDB, and it's in the record, again, at clerk's record 833 to 834.
Could you repeat that?
Yeah, clerk's record 833 to 834.
Thank you.
Right. But the guidebook doesn't say court. If you look at where it says void, it says overturned on appeal. It doesn't say by a court. Thank you.
Mr. Aldrin.
Dr. Van Boven was not put on a list. He was, it was correctly reported that his license was restricted in February 2016, and it was correctly reported that there was insufficient evidence to support the allegations in December 2017. There's no evidence he's on any list that is hurting him whatsoever. The evidence is that the NPDB correctly reports his disciplinary history and correctly reports that he was that the charges, the allegations were dismissed against him. He's not on a list. I want that to be made clear. I also heard that he's been punished, that the board found that he didn't, that found the insufficient evidence, but then they punished him anyway. That's not true. The final order does not punish Dr. Van Boven, does not sanction Dr. Van Boven. It dismisses the allegations against him. And according to the NPDB, that's reportable to the NPDB as a revision to action report. That's also in federal regulations.
Mr. Eldred, we were grilling Mr. Tuckfeld on Holm versus McRaven. On the other side of that, what about Houston Belt versus City of Houston? Is that controlling in this case? Or, and if not, why not?
Which part of that?
Well, that talks about a circumstance in which, where a government actor was acting, the City of Houston was acting ultra vires, so.
Well, I think there's two ways to act ultra vires. One is to fail to perform ministerial act, and one is to act outside your discretion. And I think we all agree that there's only two choices here, void report or revision to action report.
Well, and this, in Houston versus Belt, I think it had something to do with whether or not the officers in question were considering proper, were taking proper things into consideration in making their determination. I mean, so it's kind of like this, you know, there's a ministerial duty out there to do whatever, enter whatever order or permit was that there was in question, and then there was the subsequent question of did they get it right? And I think the question is, do we go to the did they get it right, or the Hall versus McRaven kind of analysis, which is the one that's controlling, I think, is the question. If I misstated it, please let me know.
And they were talking about absolute discretion versus limited discretion. And so in City of Houston, they've got limited discretion, and the Supreme Court held they overstepped their bounds. And then the next year, in a different scenario, the Supreme Court said, no, they had absolute discretion. So
I do not agree the board has absolute discretion in this case. To me, it's more than it's in the ministerial duty part side of the equation. But and as we stated in our brief over and over again, we feel like we performed our ministerial duties correctly, and the relief that Dr. Van Boven requests would be contrary to that. But to the extent there is some discretion here, I think you're absolutely right. If I'm following you correctly. That even if the board gave the wrong report, but they just exercised their discretion incorrectly, that's not an ultra vires claim. You have to clearly show it was outside their discretion, or that there was a ministerial duty to do something else. I hope I'm getting to what you were asking, but I would just go back to what the MPDB itself said, and I'm going to quote from Joint Exhibit 18. The board in this case did not vacate or overturn the order of temporary restriction issued on February 29th, 2016. Rather, it dismissed your case and removed the restriction on your medical license. It's addressing Dr. Van Boven here. Therefore, pursuant to the regulations that govern the NPDB, the board was legally required to file a revision to action report.
So is it your contention that Dr. Van Boven at that point should have challenged that order and on appeal to the district court and failed to do so? And he could have challenged that final order, and he didn't? Or?
I don't know what he should have done. That's up to him, of course. I do know that he knew within the time period to move for rehearing that the temporary order had not been overturned, let alone overturned on appeal.
Okay.
I think he's complaining about the final order. I mean, I know you keep going back to the temporary order, but I understood him to be arguing, and he can correct me later if I'm wrong, you know, that it was the final order that is what led to the erroneous, in their estimation, what is an erroneous report in the federal reporting database. So are you saying he could have appealed through a suit for judicial review the final order dismissing the case against him, or would the state be challenging that attempt as well?
I think he could have, under Wiseman, moved for rehearing of the final order, because Wiseman says on page 3 that if you want to challenge a temporary order, you have to go through the APA procedures. And the reason I keep going back to the temporary order is because a temporary order is kind of like the indictment or the charges. To get rid of the indictment or the charges off the record, you need to get it expunged in criminal law. And you often can't do it. In this case, he's not even tried to get that indictment, the temporary order, expunged. The way to do it, I think, would have been to file this suit for judicial review. because the SOA hearing did not expunge the temporary order, as the MPDB agreed with the in what I just read.
Is there any such expunction procedure in place at the SOA level?
I do not think so.
Precisely. So I mean, he's got to work within the confines that the state gave him. And yes. So I think the point is the final order could he have appealed that through a suit for judicial review?
Yes.
And is that the proper course of action?
Well, your question assumes that there is a proper course of action. I don't know what his goal is here. His goal in this case is to get the board to issue a void report. He can't get the board to issue a void report unless he gets the temporary restriction overturned. Temporary restriction was not overturned. And he knew it was not overturned within the time period to move for rehearing and move for judicial review. He didn't amend his lawsuit until August of 2018, many, many months after the NPDB had already stated that the board reported the final order correctly. What the Revision Act report says is the temporary restriction, there was insufficient evidence to support the allegations. And he's not complaining about that. What he's complaining about is that the final order didn't erase the temporary restriction. And the reason that the final order cannot erase the temporary restriction, in addition to federal law, is because the temporary restriction was not overturned on appeal. That's what he needs. It hasn't been overturned, let alone by a court. It's hypothetical. You could see maybe if the board has authority to vacate charges during the informal process. I don't believe the statute specifically says the board can vacate the process later, but then maybe they could if they had decided the temporary restriction order was wrong from the start. In hindsight, they could have maybe vacated it. They didn't. That was not an issue. In fact, the ALJ's opinion, the same ALJ who ruled that there was insufficient evidence to support the allegation, did talk about how the allegations were serious, how they were heartfelt, how they were consistent. The ALJ all but said, of course the board temporarily restricted his license under these allegations. They had a duty to do that. Dr. Van Boven was accused of some pretty nasty stuff, and the board did something about it. Although ultimately he won, that doesn't mean the board was wrong to have done something about it in the first place. And that's what I keep going back to. He needs to get rid of that temporary restriction order. He needs to show that the temporary restriction, or in the criminal context, it might be easier to think about, but the charges should not have been brought in the first place. The charges should have been vacated, erased from the record.
Let me change the level of generality. Do you think that the court would have jurisdiction over a claim based on the medical board's failure to file a report?
That who would have the jurisdiction? The court?
The court. Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, does the court have subject matter jurisdiction over...
No,
an alleged error in the reporting process. Would the court have jurisdiction over the failure to file such a report?
Only if the failure was ultra-virus.
I think that's what I'm asking.
Okay.
Is the failure to file a report at all, would that be ultra-virus?
I think yes. I think they had to do a revision to action report. If they hadn't done a revision to action report, that would have been ultra-virus act. I'm not sure who would have sued over that. But yes, that would have been ultra-virus, not to submit a revision to action report.
Or the void report after a reversal on appeal.
If there had been a reversal on appeal, and the board would have had to report that to the NPDB, yes, there would have been a third report in that alternative. Yes.
That would be ultra-virus, the refusal to, or the failure. to file that kind of a void report after an appeal?
I think after a judicial appeal, yes.
Right.
I'm not conceding that what happened here was an appeal.
Agreed. Okay.
My time is up, so I guess I'm stopped. Thank you.
Just a couple quick points, and I want to call your attention again to those exhibits that we submitted that, you know, and this is a blow up of it. We got to the SOA portion of it, and was there a violation? No. It goes back up. It's dismissed. It's gone. If there was a violation, then we have this court appeal process. What could we have done? There is no, if we had sought to appeal that decision, the court would have said, how were you aggrieved? Because where we were aggrieved is after all that happened, a letter was sent. That's the big point, okay? And I think we've heard that it's ministerial. The state mentioned that we didn't amend the lawsuit until much later. Dr. Van Boven was representing himself pro se. The minute I got on this, we amended the lawsuit. So that it's not because we were just sitting on our rights. He was struggling. He's been struggling with this for years to try to take care of this. The state talked about some language from the National Practitioner Data Bank about how the board did not vacate or overturn the temporary restriction. What did it do? It dismissed it. The guidelines don't say anything about dismissal except this. It says any dismissal or closure of a formal proceeding is an adverse action if it's a dismissal because of the healthcare practitioner surrendered the license or became subject the subject of a proceeding or because of the subject of the proceeding left the state or jurisdiction. Not a dismissal because there was no evidence of any sanctions. This, the National Practitioner Data Bank doesn't understand state law. And the state never told the National Practitioner Data Bank about 187.61, about how this is ancillary, that it's one corpus. This all comes together in one corpus. And when it was dismissed, we don't keep going. It's gone. The entire corpus is gone. It's not like an indictment. An indictment doesn't have provisions in regulations like 187.61 calling this ancillary. Okay, so that is our key statute here, or regulation. That is the key regulation that tells us that when this was all said and done, it goes away. We had some. The state said there's no evidence that this list hurts him. There's plenty of evidence. We have that temporary injunction hearing. Dr. Van Boven testified to that. Rocky Wilcox.
I don't think we can be worried about it at this point. This is whether or not the trial court had subject matter jurisdiction.
Well, that's right. And you know, that's a really good point. We have enough in the record to have you tell the court that they have jurisdiction to figure this out. I think there's still some more discovery that needs to be done. I mean, there's a lot that happened behind the scenes in this entire process that give me great cause for concern, especially with these press releases and the TMB actively trying to destroy Dr. Van Boven even after this decision. But, you know, we got here because they filed, the minute I got on board and did that petition, they filed the plea to jurisdiction. That's fine. But there's jurisdiction here. There is a basis for jurisdiction here because this is a ministerial duty, and these defendants had an obligation to do what they were supposed to do, to follow the law.
Well, but that still gets us back to, and I want to give you one last chance to help me understand y'all's position on Hall and how because Hall talks about, yes, there's ministerial duties, but there's a difference between performing the duty, i.e. issuing an order, potentially a blank order, but an order, doing what, versus the thought process and the conclusions reached in performing that ministerial duty. And I think it talks about the differences.
Well, that's right.
And if you want to tell us where this case fits in that would be very helpful.
Both Hall and Houston Belt can be read together to stand for the proposition that if you have absolute discretion, there is no ultra vires to be had. They don't have absolute discretion here, and that's how it all fits together. They were required, and they're required by 187.61, the ancillary language, the regulation. That's what's different than Hall. That's what's different than Houston Belt. That's what's different than any other activity in any other state. We have that regulation that makes this one corpus, and that's. I've run out of time, and if you have any more questions, I'm happy to answer.
Judge Baker.
Thank you.
No. Okay. Well, thank you for Good argument. And with that, the case will be submitted, and the court is in recess, subject to the call of the presiding judge or the chief.
All right, Your Honor.